Morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Lynn and I'm the representative from the church board this morning. I hope you all enjoyed the extra hour of time we got today due to daylight savings time. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please take the order of service home. There's a few announcements in there that you can read. Today is the last day to order Suic fruits and nuts. Proceeds of the sale fund ads on public radio for the UU churches of southeastern Wisconsin. See Jerry Flakus in the social hall after today's service if you'd like to order. Join us next week, Sunday, November 14th. We're going to have a listening session regarding church security and our firearms policy. As some of you know, after an incident this summer at UU Church West where a guest had brought a loaded gun into the service, our church has had to think more intentionally about our church security. There was much discussion about this on our email list and related about the issue and then the related signage. So please come and share your comments or questions next week. It'll be here in the sanctuary. Our annual Thanksgiving potluck dinner will be held after service on Sunday, November 21st. That's the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And there's a sign up in the social hall. And you can see Barb Adams with any questions. She's back there. Socrates Cafe will meet this Saturday, November 13th from 7 to 9 at the Milwaukee Street Traders in Delafield. All are welcome to join in. It's lively. It's fun. There's no homework required. You just come and help try to answer a philosophical question of our choosing. So if you have any questions, you could see me or Phil. Okay, Al. Al has an announcement of about our church survey.
Thank you for dealing with me. I've been persistent, arrogant, forceful. And thankfully, I'm here to tell you that if you've procrastinated, if you never wanted to complete it, or if you don't know about the survey, don't worry, we're done. We had quite a successful response to it. I'm pleased to let you know that we're going to be using the information for a variety of ways to increase curiosity. So in the future, there will be some items out at the greeting table, and you may start to see them in our overall awareness raising, if you will. Just to give you a little teaser, if you look on your order of service, you will find seven principles. I won't pick out and say do number one, two, three. But here's what some of our members responded with. I don't want to be forced to pick just one. I feel the number one, the respect for the interconnected web of existence feels closest to me, and it's like kind of do unto your neighbor. Pick one. I'd say the seven principles are just like people. They're all equal. Thanks.
And Barbara Gale has an announcement about a book group.
Good morning. I'm going to be leading a six-week class on the discussion of this book. It's John London's book called The New Mandala, and he wrote it with the Dalai Lama, or input from the Dalai Lama. He was in Dharamsala for over a year. He's a Protestant minister, and the book more or less for John, it's a story of his own discovery of how Buddha's wisdom helped him grow in his own spiritual life. It becomes a book, a guide to the reader of how the Buddhist wisdom and methods can help us in our own spiritual journey, regardless of the faith of our former formation. So it's deep. I ask people to read the first chapter, and it starts tomorrow evening from 7 to 9. I'm going to be out in the social hall. I'll have the book there. They're $11 each. And it's we're going to go through it, and the group's kind of going to decide how we're going to handle this best, because there is a lot in here. So thank you very much.
I invite you to greet those sitting around you.
Where did Al go? I think he's out breaking now.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'll try to remember.
If you're visiting with us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitors table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available about our church and Unitarian Universalism, so please help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be very happy to talk to you about that as well. If you're visiting us with your children, it's our custom for the kids to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or stay in the service. And if you'd like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. There's a nursery just outside the door to my right over here across the entryway if there's a need for childcare during the service. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you introduce them. Or if you're a guest and you've brought yourself and would be comfortable introducing yourself, we'd like to welcome you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Justin Modra. This is my fiance, Sam Avery. It's our first time here.
Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Please put your cell phones on silent at this time. Our speaker today is our minister, Reverend Jane Espenson, who will be talking about what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. And I hope you all find today's service interesting and that you learn something about being a Unitarian Universalist. We will now have our monthly food pantry collection. This month's collection of food and money will go to the Sussex Food Pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with food pantry on the memo line or the envelope. Thank you.
Our opening words are by Robert French Levens. Holy and beautiful, the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend: faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place.
That make us who we are. Is a man both strong and brave? Can women read the stars? Maybe we are different. Maybe not. Who knows what's true? But help me see.
Our chalice lighting this morning, instead of singing it to number 372 in our hymnal, we're simply going to say the words, and the words are printed in your order of service. And as we light this flame, we like to think about these words because they are representative of why we gather here in this congregation and this religion on this morning. Ours be the poems of all tongues, all things of loveliness and worth, all arts, all ages, and all songs, one life, one beauty on the earth. I'd like to invite the children to come up for a story, and the story today is called How's Your Heart? So you're all invited to come up here. Good morning.
I'm glad to see all of you today. Some of you are dressed in heart colors, aren't you? This is a story. This is a story by a woman named Reverend Barbara Marshman, and she wrote it, and it reminded her of her grandmother. So she starts like this. As you know, your heart isn't really made out of red paper, is it? You know where your heart is, right? It's right in the middle of your chest, and your heart is mostly a muscle. It's about the size of your fist, and it pumps blood all through your body. And perhaps you've listened to someone else's heartbeat. Have you ever heard that? Where it goes, ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. So what your heart really is an organ in your body that pumps blood. But we like to think that our feelings come from our hearts. And maybe this is because when you're excited, your heart beats more quickly. Or when you feel relaxed, your heart beats more slowly. And we like to think that when someone is in love, that their heart beats quickly every time they see the person or the kitty or the puppy or the gerbil or the hamster and the guinea pig. That their heart beats a little faster because they are in love with that little pet. Our hearts and our feelings seem to work together. Now, says Reverend Barbara Marshman, when I was a little girl, my grandmother would say things that I didn't quite understand. She would describe other people and talk about their hearts, and I wasn't quite sure what she meant. For example, when she thought someone was especially kind and good, she would say, "Oh, he has a heart of gold." And if you think about it, that expression makes sense. Because if our hearts seem to be where our feelings are, and if someone is good, they are as good as gold. And then that makes sense to say that someone's heart is as good as gold. But when I was a little child, says Barbara Marshman, here's how I imagined it. Well, this isn't exactly gold, but orange. She pictured a heart, an actual pumping heart. And sometimes, says Barbara Marshman, my grandmother would talk about a different kind of person, a person who didn't have the normal kinds of feelings that that humans have, and she would say, "Oh, that person has a heart of stone." And so when I was a little girl, says Barbara Marshman, I thought it maybe looked like something like this. And of course, nobody wants to have a heart of stone, do they? Well, my grandmother knew someone who was warm and good, who was always ready to help other people. And she would say, "Oh, now that person is very, very warm-hearted." And this is how I imagined that they looked, just sort of flittering and fluttering in the wind like a butterfly in the wind, the warm wind of summer. Or there might be someone who had enough love for everyone, who my grandmother would call big-hearted. And here's how I saw that in my mind's eye. With a heart with room for everybody to fit in. And every year, Valentine's Day comes just 2 days after Abraham Lincoln's birthday. And he was a president of ours a long time ago, wasn't he? And in the old days, people like my grandmother used to call Abe Lincoln the Great Heart, because he worked tirelessly to free the slaves in the United States. And of course, you know how I imagined Great Heart when I was little. Did I think it was big or small? Big. And positive, right? Other hearts booming within it, and flowers and lots of positive, hopeful thoughts. And lovely color to make us feel joyful and positive in the darkness of life. And then, my grandmother said, if you show your feelings easily, then you wear your heart on your sleeve. And I'm going to have that on all day. A great heart is someone who really makes a difference in the world. And a great heart is something that I want you all to think about for yourselves today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and when you have your next birthday and then your next birthday and then your next birthday and your next birthday. To always, always, always try to be the very, very best person that you can be in the world. And then you will have a great, great heart. And you can even wear one on your sleeve. So, thank you. That is our story for today. Thank you. This is the time where you are invited to stand up if you care to and sing the first hymn of the morning. It is number 112, Do You Hear? Time in our service for our offertory. And I'd just like to read these words of offering by Helen Johnson Fay. The offering is a sacrament of the free church. It is supported by a voluntary generosity of all who join with us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values.
This is the sacred time in our service when we share our deepest concerns and our great joys with each other. If you choose to share, raise your hand and the usher will bring you a microphone. Tell us your name and then briefly state your joy or concern. And I'll light a candle to represent that joy or concern so that our spiritual community can hold that in our thoughts and prayers. First, I'll light our memorial candle in recognition of the many conflicts that are going on in our world right now, in the hope that we can find a better way.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'd like you to light a candle of joy. My husband and I had our 20th anniversary last week.
Hi, good morning. I'm Barbara. I'd like you to light a candle of concern, and I'm asking for blessings for my brother's family. They just lost the grandmother after she was diagnosed with cancer of the brain just a week and a half ago.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I want to have a great joy today because I can sit here in this pew and a bunch of teenagers are going out to my house and cleaning up all the leaves and washing the windows, and I'm just going to sit here. And but I love them for that.
Hi, I'm Julie. I just want to say and light a candle and say thanks for all the positive energy and thoughts that were going towards my mom. She had surgery on October 13th, and it was a pretty rough couple weeks, but she's doing much better now, and she's actually out in California getting some sunshine and rest.
Hi, I'm Al. Concern is that today is proving that I'm getting old, as Allie is 18. So joy for my youngest being 18 and concern.
I'll light our final candle to symbolize the joys and concerns that we keep deep in our heart. And do know if you have any concerns that you would like to bring to our minister, you can contact Jane personally.
I invite you now into a time of meditation, prayer, and reflection. We take about a minute to sit in silence, and I will lead you into that with these words by Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. And for a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. May it be so. I invite you now to sing the meditative hymn, and you may remain seated for this. It is number 95 in your gray songbook, and it is entitled, There Is More Love Somewhere. Well, an official good morning to you. I'm going to begin by doing a short little reading by Valdemar Augauer, who is a retired Unitarian Universalist minister. And he has this to say. Religious liberals put less emphasis than most people do on specific formal beliefs and more on practical, concrete action. Their interest is in deeds, not creeds. They are not as much concerned about what a person says about religion as with what he or she does with it. They appreciate the biblical text, "Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only." Little did I know, a few days ago, when Rebecca Mulkey, who is the religious education director at Prairie UU in Madison, well, she and I were browsing around at a garage sale at Holy Wisdom Monastery in Wanakee. We were seeing what wonderful treasures we could collect for use at Prairie. And a simple brochure that I came upon would provide fodder for this talk. The brochure was entitled Myth Number 503. They pray all day. It made me laugh. Myth number 503, I exclaimed to Rebecca. I wonder what the other 502 myths are. And then I said, I wonder what myths there are about UUs. And without missing a beat, Rebecca turned to me and said, that were wife swappers. What?
Yes, she said, I've heard people say that when I tell them that I'm a UU. Well, I knew that people thought we were devil worshippers and that we danced around fires naked, since there were atheists and agnostics and pagans and Wiccans in our midst. And I knew that people thought we weren't a religion, but rather a cafe clutch that merely gathered for philosophical discussions, since there were humanists in our midst. And I knew that we were considered by people to be very New Agey, since there were very liberal Christians and feminist goddess worshippers in our midst. And I even knew that we were considered to be a marginalized religion by some, because when I was in seminary, we had to choose a marginalized religious group to write an essay about, and on the list we were given, Unitarian Universalists were cited as a religion for study. Well, here I was, a part of a marginalized religion, and I never even knew it. As far as a matter of fact, I thought I was part of a religion that was front and center in the American life and mind, and certainly in its establishment of church and state separation issues, since the signers of the Constitution of these United States were either Unitarians or Universalists or thought in those terms. Thomas Jefferson, for example. And what about the other movers and shakers in our religious history? Susan B. Anthony, Clara Barton, James Adams, Joseph Priestley, Albert Schweitzer, just to name a very, very few. Well, what of them? Do we consider them or their works to be fringe or marginalized achievements? Of course not. So why is this religion thought about in those terms? Why are we not known here as one of the United States' central religions? Well, perhaps it has a bit to do with location. My aunt lives on the East Coast, and she says that they know what a UU is because there are Unitarian Universalist churches on practically every corner. They do not, however, know what a Lutheran is. But another part of why we are not known as a central religion is that we don't proselytize. One of our mottos is deeds and not creeds. We don't focus on going out and spreading the good word. We just roll up our sleeves and get to work. But we have made the mistake over the years of equating speaking about what faith tradition we belong to as being the same as proselytizing. Proselytizing is trying to convince and to convert someone into your way of thinking. Merely speaking to people about Unitarian Universalism, when religion or faith or belief comes into a conversation, is not proselytizing. It's just sharing a way of thinking, a way of being. At any rate, I have been aware of these particular definitions, these myths of who we Unitarian Universalists were as a denomination, as a religion, by others. But I have to say that wife swapping was a new one to me. Wow. But if one person heard that myth, others must have too. So, as of this moment, I am taking this opportunity right now in front of you to label that definition of Unitarian Universalism our very own myth number 503, knowing full well that there are probably at least 502 other myths out there about us that probably fall not far from that wife-swapping tree. Just like there are myths apparently abounding about those Benedictine nuns. And just like there are about Jews and Muslims and Hindus and the most conservative factions of Christianity that people might think they know something about, but in fact do not. And what about those blacks and Hispanics and gays and lesbians and transgenders and differently abled? Well, the list just goes on and on. Myth-making is rampant. And myth number one that is heard over and over again about Unitarian Universalism is that we are a religion where you can believe anything. And this is entirely not true. but that is the word that is out there about us on the street. And when myth number one starts, then the others follow in quick order, as cited above, and we are relegated to the side as a marginalized religion, as being something other and odd and out there. As a human species, the one thing we seem to do best at times is to spout things we know nothing about. Posit these things as truths, speak about them in no uncertain terms, and then the hearers of these stories nod blandly, cross their arms and shake their heads and tut-tut their tongues, and turn to their neighbors and repeat these stories. And so it goes, and so it has always gone. A false statement is taken for truth, and a new myth rises to greet the dawn. And fears are created, and hesitancies and uncertainties, or worse, come to the fore, and hatred and violence is borne out toward those who are other, about those who are not who we are, about those who we cannot let in. Every culture has these others. Every religion has them too. If Unitarian Universalism was other or out there, I would be the first to acknowledge it, and proudly so. Why not, if it's the religion that I belong to? But we, as Unitarian Universalists, are so squarely centered in this American culture, from literally its very beginnings up through its history, that I cannot stand silent when this misunderstanding of Unitarian Universalism is bandied about. And so I'm glad that you're here today so that we can talk about this a little bit. When I thought about this talk today and what it means to be a UU, the first thing I thought of and gave the title to was, we are not everything under the sun like some people think that we are. We are not some great puddle that gathers up and becomes wider by whatever gets dropped into it. Nor are we a black hole that sucks everything up, but never releases anything back into the air, into this earth, into the lives of humanity. So what does define us, since we are a liberal religious entity which challenges us to think outside the typical religious box, that asks us to draw from the best parts of all the world's religions, that speaks to parts about peace and justice and love and kindness and patience and forgiveness and about hope, that insists that we open our doors and our hearts widely enough for all who wish to join us so that they truly feel welcome where they have perhaps never, ever felt welcomed before. What does it mean to be a Unitarian Universalist? As I rolled this around in my head over the past few weeks, the one thing that kept coming up for me over and over again was this: ethical behavior. Ethical behavior sums up this religion for me, as far as I'm concerned. Thoughtful behavior. First, do no harm behavior. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you behavior. Behavior that is the result of thoughtfulness and kindness and openness and respectfulness. Behavior that considers all things from all sides, that is willing to stand apart from the crowd if the crowd is mean or bullying, that instead stands as an advocate for the oppressed and the chastised, that champions human rights, that insists upon being an engaged citizen for social change. Behavior that is led by the heart as much as it is led by the head. That has reason along with a strong dose of compassion mixed with an equal dose of passion and a huge, huge dollop of feistiness and common sense, which encourages us to examine life critically with honest discourse and honest disagreement. That is what this religion is all about. And that is what is required here. That, and of course a good sense of humor, and the ability to laugh at ourselves. We must never reach the point where we need to safeguard who we are by becoming rigid within ourselves, by protecting our own theological biases to the exclusion of others. Nor are we to become so politically correct that we cannot make light of things, make light of our own foibles or of humanity's foibles or even of religious differences. We must be able to joke about ourselves and even about others without people getting all up in arms about it. The common sense we use when deciphering the larger questions of life must also be applicable when it comes to religious differences. For example, we don't believe in the rapture or that the world is coming to an end, as some religious factions do. And so, deciding to put those predicted dates on the church calendar and planning a party to celebrate that we are all still here after all might be something we could consider. It'd be a fun and joyous occasion. Or joking about the existence of heaven. There's a joke that says that when we die, there will be two signs just outside the gates of St. Peter. One sign points to the right and says, to heaven. And the other sign points to the left and says, for the Unitarians, a discussion on heaven. Or how about the joke about what bad singers we are in our Unitarian Universalist congregations? And the reason for this? We can't sing because we're so busy looking ahead to see if we agree with the text. As a matter of fact, Unitarians and Universalists have joked about themselves and others for a very long time. During the Civil War, there was a Universalist minister named Thomas Starr King who served as a Unitarian in a Unitarian church in San Francisco. And he said this about the Unitarians and the Universalists. The Universalists believe that God is too good to damn them, whereas the Unitarians believe they are too good to be damned. So true. We can laugh at these things because they are of unimportance. But we must never turn a blind eye in the name of religious tolerance to religious or cultural practices that harm, such as female mutilation or the stoning or the execution of a woman because she had an affair. Nor must we stand silently by when people who are differently gendered from us or who have different skin from ours or who come from different cultures and religions from ours are taunted, shamed, persecuted, or killed by those who are afraid of otherness, who are ignorant and blinded by the hatred that they have been taught. We must never be silent then, but we must do all that we can to stop such insanity and speak courageously about what is wrong and speak just as forcefully about what is right, what is the right way for us to behave in the world that we share. And this is not proselytizing. This is a humane act, and it is a religious act. Religious. We discuss theology here at our UU churches and societies and fellowships, even though many of us, me included, are atheists or agnostics, so either do not believe there is a God or do not know whether there is a God and actually consider it to be a moot point, as do I. As Unitarian Universalists, we wrestle with the larger questions of life, these religious and theological perspectives, because they are of human import. We actively seek to contemplate the greater and lesser religions of the world and the lessons provided in them, and we find ourselves both inspired by and sometimes rendered speechless by the various interpretations of these various religions, about both the good and the ill that they bring to the world, and the lasting impacts that those stances have upon humankind for generations to come, for better or for worse. All of this matters to us in our Unitarian Universalist churches. The more we learn, the more we find ourselves resolved and renewed to be a better people in the world ourselves through our attempts to at least do this religion well, this thing called Unitarian Universalism, not by rote behaviors or memorization of creeds, not by specific clothing or by certain language that we use, nor by obeyance to a god or gods in the heavens, nor a fear of the devil below, but we do this thing called religion by the way that we behave in the world, by the way that we stand upon this earth, by the way we take care of those around us, stranger and friend alike, by the way that we use our minds and our hearts in equal measure, knowing that truth is elusive, and so the seeking of it never ends. These are not easy matters which we as religious folk ponder and try to square ourselves with, nor are they simple lessons or ones that are easily acquired. These are difficult things, these questions, these searches for truth and meaning in life, these challenges to the heart and the mind and the soul. These are matters that sit in the very marrow of humanity since the beginning of time until now, and will always be the questions that are asked, because the world is often a large and frightening place, and horrific things are perpetrated upon humans, one to the other, surrounded by the question of why this way? Why not a better way? The Bible is filled with these ponderings. The Quran asks us to pray for understanding. The Torah implores us to never end our questioning. And Buddha, when asked about the one thing that he wished for humanity, said that his answer was empathy, was responding directly to the worst sides of humanity by imploring us to look to our best sides. Empathy, what we can do to understand, how we can make things different, how we can make things better in this world. Empathy. And I agree with that. And so I add to that ethical behavior and a good sense of humor. So what do we do here at this church? What are we setting out to achieve? For me, I feel we are here for the same reasons that the late 18th century Unitary minister William Ellery Channing was in Boston. He believed that, quote, "We are here as a practical religion where one finds renewal of the spirit, intellectual integrity, and the application of one's moral insights and aspirations to daily living and social existence." And interestingly, it was Channing who actually took up the name Unitarianism when he and some other liberal ministers no longer felt it was relevant for people to have to attest to a religious creed and accept doctrines such as predestination, atonement of sins, or the Trinity. And seen as heretical acts by the not-so-liberal religious of the times, Channing and others were hurled the words, "Those Unitarians!" as a distinction to being Trinitarian, believing in the Holy Trinity of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. And Channing, not one to shy away from controversy, caught the name in the air, Unitarian, with great relish, and invited others of like thinking to join with him in this new and hopeful way of being religious in the world. And thus a movement was born. Channing also wrote about the religious instruction for children, which I think applies to us all here under this roof today, whatever our ages may be. And he says this, "The great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young, but to stir up their own. Not to make them look with our eyes, but to look inquiringly and steadily with their own. Not to give them a definite amount of knowledge, but to inspire a fervent love of truth. Not to form an outward regularity, but to touch inward springs.
not to bind them by ineradicable prejudices to our particular or peculiar notions, but to prepare them for impartial, conscientious judging of whatever subjects may be offered to their decision. Not to burden the memory, but to quicken and strengthen the power of thought. Not to impose religion upon them in the form of arbitrary rules, but to awaken the conscience, the moral discernment. In a word, the great end is to awaken the soul, to bring understanding, conscience, and heart into earnest, vigorous action on religious and moral truth, to excite and cherish spiritual life. And that is what we are here about today. We are the learners and the teachers, the seekers and the tellers of the truths we have learned by living life. We are the leaders and the followers, wise enough to know what we know and to speak without hesitation what we have come to understand, and still wise enough to know what more we must learn on particular issues before we can take a stance one way or the other. We must caution ourselves to be humble in our certainties, for there are many sides to every issue. But at the same time, we must encourage ourselves to speak out loud that which we believe and to not confuse that with proselytizing. As 18th century Universalist minister John Murray, who was a predecessor of Channing, once said, "Give the people something of your vision. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Do not preach so as to deepen their theological despair. Give them not hell, but hope and courage." And so, let's give the people something of our vision, for now it is we who are the keepers of the flame, the bearers of hope and courage to a world sorely wounded and in need of these bright stars of empathy and of ethics and of love. This, and nothing more, is what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist, myths notwithstanding. The world awaits this expansive, liberal religion, and let us open our doors wide and welcome all who wish to come in. Shalom. I invite you now to rise as you wish and are able to sing the final hymn of the morning, "Where is Our Holy Church?" And it is number 113 in your hymnal. Well, this is the very exciting part of the service in a Unitarian Universalist church, and it is called a polylogue, and this is the time where those in attendance are invited to share their thoughts about this talk or about anything that they came to think upon during this hour. So you just raise your hand, and if you'd like to say something, someone will come by with a microphone.
My name is Jerry, and Jane, thank you so much for sharing the message, especially on Guest Sunday today, as to what we are and what we are not. I thought it was wonderful. The idea that we're marginalized, which I guess I've definitely heard and experienced that myself, it's interesting for a marginalized religion how influential Unitarian Universalists are in the Milwaukee area in particular, the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee, which is a alliance of the major of the faiths in the four county Greater Milwaukee area. Unitarian Universalists have leadership positions there. A couple weekends ago, a number of us attended the a Common Ground meeting in Milwaukee, which was attended by over 1,000 people. There were about 175 Unitarians, Unitarian Universalists participating in that, and some of our members are leadership positions in that. And there were a number of organizations, Hope Center in Waukesha, where some of our people have leadership roles in that organization. And it's just all over the place. And I would encourage anybody that has an interest in social action in our area in particular to get involved. And one other thing is we have a wonderful facility here with a wonderful location, which is sadly underutilized. So if any of you belong to any organizations that can use a meeting place or a place for holding events open to the public, keep this place in mind.
Gosh, you said a lot for that nickel I gave you, Jerry.
Hi, my name is Ray, and just along that your idea of myths about Unitarian Universalism, I recall when I first found this church, and I told my college-age daughter that I was coming to UU Church, and she said, "Oh, that's a free-for-all, isn't it?"
Make sure you tell her about the wife swapping.
Hi, I'm John, and thank you from me, too, for this sermon today. It was really, it resonated well for me, and it helps kind of as you think about your elevator speech, and it helps kind of articulate that and bring some thoughts. Whenever we want to try to explain it to somebody, I think your words, I wouldn't be able to choose as eloquent words as you have, but it kind of helps to sort things out in your mind, my mind. Thank you.
Yeah, for elevator speeches, most Unitarians hope that the elevator gets stuck because they have so much to say.
At one time, right after the Super Bowl, I was having a lunch discussion with a bunch of coworkers, and they made some comments about how, you know, the winning team had prayed to, you know, God and thank God that they're all Christians and that's why they won the Super Bowl. And I brought up the question, I was like, well, what about the Muslims and the Jews or other religions that are on the team? I mean, how do you think they feel about that? And one coworker that was bringing it all up, he just got super flustered and just kind of blew off the handle and went, what kind of crazy religion do you belong to?
Hi, I'm Carlin. I have told people in the past, you know, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and I'm also a Montessori teacher. And so I've kind of, my elevator speech has kind of been shortened to, well, it's kind of the Montessori of religions because they're very peace-oriented, very tolerant, very open, and independent.
Al here again. Interestingly, my 18-year-old now heard you use described in her high school classroom as a cult. I'm sure that's not new to many of us. I think the challenge for many of us may have been helped by what you talked about today, so thank you. But I think the challenge is trying to define it for somebody else. And I will continue to suggest that One should not try to do that. It is the individual's search, their responsibility to define it. So if you are stuck in the elevator, just say, I don't know. Maybe you should explore.
My name is Mike, and I want to thank you, Jane, also for, I want to echo John's words that you put together so many things in a sermon that I totally agree with. And in fact, I wasn't going to say anything today simply because I wanted your words to speak, but then I thought, since everybody else is talking, and and you know how shy I am. I've said this before in this church, that one of our strengths is, in fact, the fact that we're marginalized. For religious sentiment or religious thought, and for spiritual growth, being marginalized as a person can, if you don't end up despairing, that is, and giving up, can be a very, very powerful force in our lives. I mean, I'm going to talk about this a little bit next Sunday, about being marginalized ever since I was a little kid for obvious reasons. And that turned out to be one of my greatest strengths now. And there's something else in my life that I've had to deal with that also turned out to be, which one is supposed to remain anonymous about, you know, put two and two together, that also turned into a great strength. And one of the things I really like about Unitarian Universalism is the fact that we're so hard to figure out. And I'd rather keep it that way.
Well, you're going to be happy for a really long time, Mike. So.
My name is Alina, and I actually want to refer to Al's comment a little bit. Every time we have this discussion about what Unitarian Universalism is, I think about... As I was a little kid, I've been going to this church for a very long time. As a little kid, I had a discussion with one of my very, very Catholic friends about church. And I remember getting in this huge fight, basically him saying, so basically you guys are all a cult. And we stopped speaking after that. But that happens more and more with the young adults population. Even last month, I had a friend who was doing a philosophical paper for one of her psychology classes or something like that, and she had to interview people with less known religions. And she's like, oh, I know someone, my friend Alina, I know goes to church who, you know, I don't know much about and stuff. And she's like, let me look on my list, because they had a list of little known religions, and Unitarian Universalism was on it. And I was trying to explain it to her to the best of my ability. And she's like, so basically, you guys are all brainwashed to think that everything's good and be all-encompassing and be this perfect religion. And my response to her at this point was, no, you know what? You ask anybody, you come to my church one time and ask anybody about Unitarian Universalism, and I'm pretty sure they could come up with 10 different responses, 10 different reasons, 10 different excuses, 10 different debates, and they could probably come up with 10 different things that are not okay about Unitarian Universalism, just because that's the kind of people we are. We like to talk, we like to discuss, and I just, you know, I think it's really hard to try to explain what Unitarian Universalism is, especially to people who, in this area at least, are not very encompassing. And I've almost to the point where I've just given up.
Well, don't give up. But I think it's just, we don't need to engage in big discussions and controversial discussions. It's much nicer to just say, well, we just really believe that we should all come together and try to find a peaceful way to live on this earth. And that's what we are about. And I'd like to come to your church sometime and see what you have to, what you say there. And I'd love for you to come to my church sometime. So it's just about being welcoming, and that's all it's about. And that's all we can do in life, is just continue to welcome one another.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Tom. And I probably have a special challenge in talking about my religion, because most of the people I work with are Hindus. Okay, not just a couple. I mean, it's a Hindu majority environment. And a lot of our explanations are giving our relationship to Christianity. And that doesn't work real well with people that don't have a good grasp of Christianity in the first place. And so I really appreciate when we talk about what it is we actually believe and do, rather than a description of us, you know, like, you know, God is too good to damn us. That's all a reference to Christianity. I like to just be explicit and direct and say what it is we do.
Hi, I'm Kathy. This is not at all a deep comment, but I was thinking as you were speaking about all the really very cool people in history and literature who are UUs, and I was thinking Dr. Seuss and the fellow Fulghum who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And just last week I was reading something about Ted Sorensen, who was President Kennedy's speechwriter, who wrote his incredible inaugural speech, and he was a Unitarian. And I've just observed over time that these are really very likable and interesting people, so I feel like I'm in good company as well as amongst all of you.
All right, well, the service is over for the morning, and I'd just like to thank you for your comments and your thoughtfulness and leave you with these words by Kathleen McTeague. May the light around us guide our footsteps and hold us fast to the best and the most righteous that we seek. May the darkness around us nurture our dreams and give us rest so that we may give ourselves to the work of our world. Let us seek to remember the wholeness of our lives, the weaving of light and shadow in this great and astonishing dance in which we move. Go in peace.